by rewriting history and giving an alternative to what really happened, which is one failed leader after another. They hope to convince people that they've been successful.
I believe many of the ex-gay program leaders are victims themselves.
Whenever we're dealing with religion and sexuality, the arena is going to become supercharged.
So take me back to women's prison, won't you please?
Secret lover, secret lover, wanna tell the whole world.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Latvians march for pride against the tide. Zach's trauma triggers questions about conversion claims. And a cowgirl band, a solo muse, and Turn It Up Rock from the audiophile. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Adam Borstein.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Ramp, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 30th, 2005. Latvia's first ever Pride March this week was surrounded by angry counter-demonstrators who were barely kept at bay by a heavy police presence. The lesbi-gay marchers numbered somewhere between 100 and 300, while their opponents were at least 1,000 strong. Counter-demonstrators were already in place at the start of the march, following a rally organized by right-wing extremist groups, despite the city having denied them a permit. Marchers stepped off solemnly with rainbow flags and signs including lesbian and gay rights are human rights and God loves all. But the angry crowd moved with them, waving anti-gay signs and loudly chanting abuse. Several times, the counter-demonstrators attempted to block the march and had to be physically removed by police. 8 of them were arrested. Counter-demonstrators pelted marchers with eggs and tomatoes, sprayed them with tear gas, seized and destroyed their signs, shouted threats, and attempted to attack them. The march had to be rerouted. When the march had circled back to Riga's Anglican Church, marchers were only able to enter the building between lines of police officers holding back the crowd. The counter-demonstrators continued to surround the church and chant throughout the special pride service. When the service ended, police found it necessary to provide buses to evacuate the marchers. Thanks to police efforts, there were no reported injuries.
It had required a court order for the march to take place at all. Although the city had originally granted a permit for Pride, it withdrew it in the wake of criticism by Latvian Prime Minister Edgars Kalvaitis. According to the European chapter of ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, that's the first time any prime minister of a European Union member state has publicly condemned a Pride event. ILGA has been joined by human rights watchdog Amnesty International in expressing concern that such statements from political leaders can encourage homophobic attacks.
Much of the opposition to Pride was orchestrated. Both the Latvian Evangelical Lutheran Church and the nation's Roman Catholic Church had campaigned against it, joined by a number of politicians and far-right groups. An ecumenical church service staged by all the nation's leading Christian denominations was held near the route on the day of the march, ostensibly to pray for traditional family values, while the Latvian Christian radio station devoted the day to special programming of prayers for what it called the lost souls of homosexuals.
The march left a mark on Riga. In its wake, the city council considered, but rejected by a margin of 3-1, a proposal to remove the city executive from office for allowing it. That proposal was introduced by a member of the anti-gay Latvia First Party, one of four parties in the national ruling coalition. According to Baltic Times, Latvia First leader Juris Luhans, who serves as Riga's deputy mayor, then announced his resignation, stressing it was solely because the march had not been stopped. Blaming the New Era Party rather than the court order for allowing the march, he declared that party has no moral standards.
There's also been organized religious opposition to the Pride March in Belfast, even though it's been held there annually for the last 14 years. Some Christian groups, including the Baptist, Catholic, and Free Presbyterian churches, formed a Stop the Parade campaign, declaring they find Pride morally offensive. They complained to police, who referred the matter to Northern Ireland's Parades Commission. That commission had been created in 1997 in an effort to stem violent religious conflicts sparked by some traditional parades. This week, the commission ruled entirely in favor of Pride, approving its planned route on its scheduled date and adding none of the restrictions opponents had tried to place on it, such as dress code. Religious opposition to Pride has been steadily increasing and is blamed for some violence at last year's Pride events. Police have recorded an alarming near tripling in anti-gay attacks in Northern Ireland in the space of a year. Recently, there have been separate reports of a gay man and a lesbian who were forced to flee their homes. One survey found that three-quarters of Northern Ireland's gays and lesbians do not feel safe to walk alone at night.
Another Pride March permit battle is underway in Moscow. Activist Nikolai Alexeyev of GayRussia.ru and Evgenia Debryanskaya held a press conference this week to announce plans for the Russian capital's first-ever Pride March next year on the May 27th anniversary of the decriminalization of private homosexual acts between consenting adults in 1993. But Moscow Mayor Yuri Lushkov didn't wait to receive their formal request to tell reporters that he'd reject it immediately, saying that he will protect the interests of Moscovites and they would not support such an initiative. The activists had anticipated that kind of response and vowed not only to sue the mayor, but to take their case all the way to the European Court of Human Rights if necessary. A previous attempt to organize a Pride March in Moscow in 2001 had been rejected as an affront to residents' religion.
Singapore's big annual Pride beach party called The Nation was denied its permit this year as contrary to the public interest. But the lesbian-gay community is responding with indignation. That's the name organizers are giving to a series of events celebrating Pride all through August, reportedly a first for Singapore. The four-year-old beach party was moved to gay-friendly Phuket in Thailand. But Singapore's community plans to celebrate Pride at home with forums, art exhibits and performances, and a barbecue. But some of those events may need to make their own applications for official public entertainment licenses, police indicated, despite a statement by Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong last year that indoor talks wouldn't require licenses unless they dealt with race or religion.
In Canada, the Pride March in Halifax this week was a joyous occasion for what was generally reported as several hundred marchers, 20 floats with blaring music, a truckload of gay and lesbian firefighters, and thousands of spectators, some of them joining in the spirit with rainbow flags and specially designed T-shirts. The Halifax Herald newspaper cited Halifax Regional Police as estimating 7,000 participants, with hundreds more watching from the sidelines. In contrast to most Pride celebrations around the world this year, there was little in Halifax relating to marriage equality. National legislation enacted last week ended the biggest part of that struggle with a victory for same-gender couples. But even in tolerant Canada, there was a problem. While for the marchers, Pride may have been an empowering experience, it was just the opposite for about 2,000 local households. They lost electricity for almost an hour and a half. Nova Scotia Power blamed the parade, but not out of homophobia. Service was restored once their teams had removed parade streamers from the power lines.
Same-gender couples in New Zealand have already won civil unions, almost legally equivalent to marriage. But there's still active opposition to giving them marriage itself. A private member's U.S.-style bill to specifically define marriage as exclusively between one man and one woman came very close to reaching the floor of Parliament this week. But it was pushed back on the agenda, so it cannot be taken up until the new Parliament is seated following elections, and it appears that its sponsor, Larry Baldock of the United Future Party, may be abandoning the effort. The bill was expected to be defeated.
Meanwhile, in the U.S. state of Maine, the Secretary of State this week made it official that an initiative to repeal civil rights protections for lesbian, gay, and trans people has qualified for the November ballot. The legislature and governor this year enacted a law prohibiting sexual orientation discrimination in employment, housing, public accommodations, and credit, but it's been on hold while the Christian Civic League of Maine went through the process known as a people's veto. Once before, a majority of Maine voters endorsed a similar people's veto of an essentially identical civil rights measure. They've also previously rejected an affirmative ballot initiative to enact the same civil rights protections. But on yet another occasion, Maine voters also rejected an initiative that would have made it impossible to add a new protected category to the state's Human Rights Act, a move that directly targeted lesbian gays.
And finally, it won't be for long, but San Diego, California has become the biggest city in the U.S. with an openly gay or lesbian mayor. At 1.2 million, San Diego is the seventh largest city in the U.S. After scandals forced the resignations this month of both the mayor and the deputy mayor, as well as another council member, the city council had to act quickly to select a temporary replacement. Openly lesbian council member Tony Atkins was chosen last week to act until a second vote was taken this week, and that vote has confirmed her. But her term will end in early December after a citywide election in which she's not a candidate. San Diego can take it in stride. San Diego County already elected the nation's first openly gay or lesbian district attorney, Bonnie Dumanis.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 30th, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Adam Borstein.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Cowboy songs on a dark horse set closets on fire later in the program.
Save our children, give them strength. We will go to any length to keep our children's future fate on that well-worn path, narrow and straight.
Several weeks ago, a gay teen named Zach told the online world that he was being packed off to a reparative therapy camp. A network of bloggers and activists took notice, and all hell broke loose against the heaven-bent Christian fundamentalist who'd vowed to heterosexualize him. What could have passed anonymously as one more sad coming-out story became the darling of news magazines and Good Morning America, with even moral crusader Jerry Falwell weighing in. This Way Out's Jerry Trowbridge, who's been following Zach's story, says there are yet more twists in this convoluted tale.
Yes, Greg, it happened on Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network on July 13th. Up until then, as you recall, we weren't completely sure there even was a Zach, and some apologists for the ex-gay ministry Love in Action claimed this was all a hoax. The ministry wouldn't confirm or deny. They cited their client's privacy, and the activists demonstrating at the ministry building in Memphis urged local television crews not to videotape the kid we came to know as Zach, even standing in places to block their shots. But that all changed on July 13th, when Christian Broadcasting Network, or CBN, the U.S. religious cable and satellite network that does news with a right-wing religious slant, got an exclusive interview with Joe Stark, Zach's dad, who defended his actions in sending Zach to an ex-gay program. In doing so, he outed his own son, and it changed everything. Next to an interview with Zach himself, a picture of Zach's father admitting that he had basically forced his child into this program, was the money shot, and all the national media that had been quietly working on stories that they'd picked up from the internet blogs or local Memphis media went right to press. The New York Times, Salon.com, MSNBC Internet, Paula Zahn on domestic U.S. CNN, Good Morning America, the morning news magazine on the American Broadcasting Company TV. Several shows heard on NPR, including On Point, all rushed to press or to air. The fundamentalist right's latest game plan is to try and use diversity to get its religious views any place the gay community gets a fair hearing. So any place PFLAG goes, that's Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, PFOX wants an equal opportunity. PFOX is Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays. The umbrella ex-gay organization Exodus just held their Freedom Conference in Asheville, North Carolina, with Jerry Falwell speaking to an enthralled crowd of ex-gays and their supporters. He sided with Joe Stark. Letting kids engage in homosexual lifestyle, Falwell said, was like letting them play on the interstate. But the ex-gay forces, in taking to the media, escalated the culture war. And the bloggers who started this began questioning the nature of the therapy at Love in Action, which helped fuel a new state investigation over whether therapy was going on at an unlicensed facility using untrained counselors. The Love in Action website got some fast editing, and references to anything but ministry quickly disappeared. The mainstream media frenzy is now in full bloom, but we've put together sort of a this-way-out kitchen cabinet of experts to try and give us a deeper understanding of the big issues behind what mainstream media is saying about a story they've just discovered that we've been talking about online for months. When we first covered this story here at This Way Out, we noted how the Internet let Zach post his scream online. In cyberspace, everybody can hear you scream, almost at once, because the Internet is virtual. But because there's nothing tangible in cyberspace, the ex-gay forces have the ability to rewrite their own history. They can morph from therapy to ministry with a mouse click. It gets worse. Read early Love in Action literature, like the book The Third Sex, and you'll see that in the original, John Evans was the first to suggest to Kent Philpott that a ministry be formed to reach out to gays who are uncomfortable with their orientation. But if you read the website at Love in Action, now at least today, you'll see that Love in Action was founded by Frank Worthen.
The ex-gay ministries are trying to rewrite history.
Wayne Besson, probably the gay community's leading expert on ex-gay ministries. His book, Anything But Straight, makes the case that ex-gay ministries are notoriously ineffective and serve primarily as the political tool of groups like James Dobson's Focus on the Family. He joins us from Brooklyn, where he's writing a novel.
They're revisionists. They want people to believe that they've been successful from the beginning. So by rewriting history and giving an alternative to what really happened, which is one failed leader after another, they hope to convince people that they've been successful.
So in all of this, who are the bad guys and who are the victims?
Peterson Toscano is a graduate of Love in Action. A former Christian missionary, he tried for years to change his orientation and finally came to the realization that his sexuality is a part of who he is. He joins us from San Jose, where he's performing his one-man show about his experiences called Doing Time in the Homo Nomo Halfway House.
I believe many of the ex-gay program leaders are victims themselves. Many, as teens, got trapped into this whole ex-gay movement, and in hopes of trying to conform to what the church is saying, what a proper heterosexual is supposed to be, they followed this path that has taken them down a road that now they in turn oppress other people and try to change them.
I think whenever we're dealing with religion, sex, and sexuality, the arena is going to become supercharged.
Josh Estrin is a licensed psychotherapist in Florida with dual masters of science in mental health and systemic theory from Columbia University. He considers himself an anti-expert, and his theory is that you're your own expert. His book, Shut Up and Listen to Yourself, makes that case. He joins us from Plantation, Florida.
I don't think that it serves any purpose or anyone to demonize any side.
They're victims of a much larger church conspiracy to silence queer people, to change us, to make us something that we could never be.
This is the gay rights movement. This is the centerpiece for equality. And I'll tell you why. There's two things that scare the right to death. The first thing is that youth are generally more supportive of gay rights, including marriage. The second thing that terrifies them is they look at polls that show when people believe homosexuality is a choice, they're anti-gay. When people believe it's something that people are born with, that it's inborn, like eye color, height, or being left-handed, they are very supportive.
For years, the religious right has been slandering our community, saying that we have this agenda to target youth so that we can recruit and convert them. But now look who's trolling around, imposing their sexuality on young people, but none other than the religious right.
And when they come from a place of, at least in my opinion, sociologically and spiritually, from a place of religion, it becomes a very difficult debate. How do we say to him, the messages that you're getting from your God are wrong? And so my question is, once a child is, quote, sent away, what are the qualifications of the person who is spearheading this intervention? Is it simply that they've been converted?
I'm Jerry Trowbridge for This Way Out.
Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. Hi, this is Tom Robinson reminding you that you're either listening to, discovering for the first time, or tuned right in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
A gender turnabout band, a black solo muse, and a bluesy, folky, rocky kind of guy explain their musical takes in this latest entry from the audiophile.
Toronto band The Jane Waynes took their name from actor John Wayne, and their album takes down-home country music in an unexpected direction. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. The CD is called Cowboy Songs, and according to founder Tucker Dougherty, the album gives country music a twist.
I think it's a pretty diverse album in a kind of all-country genre. There's a definite gender thing going on in the content, like playing with the sort of country genre and the sort of macho cowboy role, but twisted a bit because it's women singing songs.
So take me back to women's prison, won't you please?
Find out more about the Jane Waynes album, Cowboy Songs, at www.thejanewaynes.com.
How to tell if your man's on the down low. Girls, listen closely so you know. You ask, is your feel, is your right to know. How to tell if your man's on the down low. How to tell if your man's on the down low. Inquiring minds, they want to know. Tell them Anthony Antoine told you so. How to tell if your man's on the down low. Listen closely, cause I'ma list all the signs. Even the ones not so obvious, easy to find. Gots to be clever, read between the lines. It ain't my topic, just a sign of the time. Sign one, the basics always holds true. If your man looks better than you, spends more time in the mirror than you, just might be a sign for you.
Earlier this year, we featured the spoken word trio, A Doty Muse. Well, one of them, Anthony Antoine, also has a solo career.
The title of his latest album, Closets on Fire, definitely speaks to the spirit of the music it contains.
Closets on Fire is interesting because being an independent artist at this point, I get an opportunity to record what I feel for the moment. And so there's a range of musical styles on my CD. I just hope that people appreciate that it's all music. It's music that I'm passionate about. And the continuity is that it's me. I'm Anthony Antoine, an out and proud black gay artist.
Secret lover, secret lover. Wanna tell the whole world that I got a thing for you. And no other secret lover find it hard to believe. And can see you got a thing for me too.
You can learn more about the album Closets on Fire by Anthony Antoine at www.anthonyantoine.com. That's www.anthonyantoine.com.
Bobby was taught long ago, be the one who comes to wear rescue.
Fairy tales end in happy endings.
fourth recording by Eric Hyman is one of those roll down the windows and turn up the stereo albums, and then hit replay.
Its title is Dark Horse, and with ballads and rockers, this dynamic performer packs a lot into it.
My album, called Dark Horse, is a mixture of many different styles. When I think about it, it's like as a whole, I can't think of it as one thing, because everything comes from such a different place. Like, my voice is very bluesy, and my writing is very folky, but the production of it is very rocky, and then piano has been added to that. I learned how to play piano.
Well, I can be sweet, put my arm around you. Wouldn't that be neat? Wouldn't that be neat? I'll take you to dinner, wherever you wanna dine. We could be sorry.
Find out more about Eric Hyman and Dark Horse at www.erichhyman.com. That's www.erichhyman.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Well, I don't want to be pushy. I just want you entirely. When you say no, I can't do this.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Adam Borstein, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Jerry Trowbridge, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Special thanks also to Ray Smithers. Tom Wilson Weinberg and the Tom Robinson Band performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Don't forget you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please find out how you can help keep this program on the air by logging on to our website. You can also sign up for our monthly This Way Out updates and or get our weekly program information messages by emailing tworadio@aol.com. For more information about This Way Out, please do visit thiswayout.org. You can also email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WDIY Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, to ECR Eden, New South Wales, KRUX Las Cruces, New Mexico, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.